One of the most long-lasting results of our upcoming elections, coming up next on Gospel of Life. Hello, I'm Reverend Frank Pavone, Director of Gospel of Life Ministries. Welcome to our program. Elections have consequences, and one of the most long-lasting consequences of the elections that we're about to undertake in America is the question of who will occupy the federal bench, who will the judges be, who unfortunately, and I say unfortunately because they overstep the bounds of authority that have been given to them by the Constitution, they end up being the people who set public policy sometimes more than the legislatures that you and I elect. However, elections still matter because in the elections, we elect the men and women who then appoint and confirm the federal judges. We're going to have an expert join us in this program by tape, David Barton, who founded a group called Wall Builders, and Janet Morana, our associate director, is here with us as usual. She and I will discuss these matters after listening to David. So, Janet, welcome. We've got an important election coming up.
That's right.
And I think more and more Americans are beginning to connect the dots between what they do in the voting booth and what the courts decide. And I think they're also realizing more and more the importance of this because they realize that policies like abortion on demand, gay marriage, banning of prayer in the public schools, that
right.
These did not come about because the people wanted it.
Right.
These policies came about because certain judges, unelected judges, wanted it.
That's right. You know, Roe versus Wade, which made abortion legal in this country
throughout all nine months of pregnancy,
is not a law that was passed by the Congress.
No.
It's just a court decision
right.
that the Supreme Court came down, and because of that mandate, you know, millions of children have been destroyed. Millions of men and women have been, their lives destroyed. You know, they now become to regret their abortion. Why? Not because it was the will of the people, but because a handful of judges made this decision. So what we have to really come to understand is how important who the people are that get appointed to the court.
See, on the one hand, we have to understand that there has become, in our country, an imbalance of powers. In
right.
other words, much more power is being exercised than the courts. In the courts than is supposed to be by the Constitution. But we have to be very careful when we come to realize that we don't jump to the conclusion that, well, therefore, then there's nothing we can do. What we're saying here in the program is this. Understand how influential the role of the courts is, and then realize that there is something you can do about it, because
sure.
in the elections, we're electing, for example, the United States Senate. That body of 100 people, many of whom are up for election now, they decide which of the president's nominees for the federal courts, and we're not just talking about the Supreme Court, but all the federal courts,
right.
get approved.
That's right.
They're the ones. And it's in our power to put them into office or take them out of office.
And as we speak right now, there are many of the president's nominations that are just sitting in this holding pattern.
Well, that's true,
waiting
too.
And right. waiting and waiting. Well, if we had a few more pro-life senators, conservative senators elected, then we can get some of this logjam undone and get more of these conservative people on the bench.
Because the logjam is being created by people who are afraid that these nominees, if put on the bench, are going to rule in a way that they don't agree on the issues.
That's right.
Well, then get senators in there who do agree on the issues that are the right positions. In any case, let's listen to our friend David Barton talk about this problem of the judges. Now, David's group, Wall Builders, does a fantastic job in rebuilding the foundations of understanding in our country about the founders of our country.
That's right.
Nobody knows more about the founding fathers. I mean, he talks about the founding fathers. He doesn't just talk about the letters that our founding
no.
fathers wrote. He pulls the letters out and shows you the originals.
That's right.
He's got collections that are just incredible. David has been with us on this Gospel of Life program. He's a good friend of ours over the years. Let's listen now to the founder of Wall Builders, David Barton.
Give us a little background on the problem we face today with judges.
And the problem we face today with the judges is we don't have a culture war if it's not for judges. We do not have a legislature in America that legalized abortion, but judges did. We don't have a legislature in America that said you can't pray at football games anymore. Judges did. We don't have a legislature in America that said you can't have prayers at graduations of school. Judges did. We don't have a legislature in America that said we're going to have partial birth abortions. Judges did. We don't have a legislature in America that said you can't put up the Ten Commandments. Judges did. You take any cultural, moral issue that we face today, it has been judges that have decreed the policy upon Americans, and by and large, at opposition to by the American people. We've got 77% of the nation wants the Ten Commandments, but judges said no. I mean, you take every issue. 70% of the nation says stop partial birth abortion. Judges said no, we think we'll let it go. So the whole culture war we have here is the judges against the people, by and large.
And in fact, on that example you just mentioned, partial birth abortion, we have two of the other branches of government said stop this.
That's right.
Right? The Congress
stop
banned
this.
It. The president signed it.
And 35 states had said stop this.
And
it was still growing when the court said it's okay.
And we're talking about unelected judges.
Unelected judges. See, these are unelected judges telling the rest of us what our policies will and won't be. And I tell you, that would drive our founding fathers through the roof. It's untenable. They wrote the Constitution so that wouldn't happen, but we don't read that anymore.
Well, you know, David, that's my question. How did this all get started? You know,
the two premises that Sam Adams and these other guys took into the Constitutional Convention as they're debating it and these guys are influencing it, they said, number one, we don't want judges appointed for life. We're not going to have life appointments. And they said, number two, we're going to make sure judges are accountable to the people. Now, today we hear all the time, federal judges are appointed for life. No, Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution says they're appointed for the duration of good behavior. As long as they behave right, they can stay on the bench. Well, what's bad behavior mean? Well, the Founding Fathers tell us. That's those other six clauses, one of which deals with impeaching judges. Impeachment of judges doesn't occur because they commit crimes. Impeachment of judges occurs because they committed bad behavior. Now, how do you define that? There's several things. The first Supreme Court that overturned a law of Congress, the Founding Fathers proceeded to impeach Supreme Court justices. It says, whoa, we make the laws. You guys don't make the laws. You don't make the policy. We do. So Founding Fathers thought that's bad behavior for a judge to overturn a law of Congress. It's been the last 70 years that we've changed the way we've done things.
You just said to me about bad behavior. It strikes me about the partial birth abortion case.
That's bad behavior.
So those judges that voted against that law, they should be gone
that
by now.
That one judge in San Francisco, out in California, says, I don't think I like that law. The whole nation can't enforce this law because I don't like it. That's bad behavior by a judge. You don't have an unelected judge tell the legislature what it's to do. That judge hadn't been through the deliberative process. That judge is not a policymaker. That judge is not elected by the people to make policy. And she's made policy for the rest of the nation.
The bottom line is, do we govern ourselves?
That's right.
Well, I'm very grateful to David, and Jan and I certainly hope people will get in touch with Wall Builders at wallbuilders.com is their website, and get more of the kind of clear, concise information that David communicates.
Yeah, David has a collection of books that he's written, from Original Intent to all kinds of books that really delve into things like the problem with the judges, what the Founding Fathers' intentions really were with our country. You know, we've gotten so far off kilter from what the original documents and the original thoughts and beliefs of our Founding Fathers that really going to David's writings and really studying them is a great benefit. I know for me it was a big eye-opener just to read that book, Original Intent.
Yeah, it is a fantastic resource. Now, David also talked to us about the kinds of issues that are critically important. Now, you know, we have said all along, there are many issues that the voters need to be looking at when they come to an election, when they start looking at the candidates and choosing between them. Many different issues, poverty and health care, education, employment, war and peace, capital punishment, abortion, euthanasia, the marriage, the judges issue. But not all of these issues are on an equal plane.
Yeah.
There are many of them, but they're not just arranged arithmetically, as if you just count them up and, you know, let's count how many issues does this candidate have correct, how many issues does this candidate have correct, and the candidate who is correct on more issues or that I agree with on more issues, the one I vote for, doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Because the issues are not just laid out on a table, the issues are interrelated with one another in a structure that you can imagine as a house. And this image was used by the Catholic bishops in their document, Living the Gospel of Life. They talked about a house, and they said, well, the various issues like health care, employment, and housing and whatnot are like the cross beams and the walls of the house. But what's the foundation? The foundation, they explained, is life itself.
That's right.
In other words, if you directly attack life, like you do in abortion or euthanasia, the whole structure falls, because if somebody's been aborted, what good is a health care policy when the person who's supposed to enjoy it is dead?
Right.
What good is an education plan if you're killing the children that you're supposed to be educating?
So they don't have to worry about housing.
Right. So the issues are all related, but they're related in this fashion, like a house. And we've got to make sure that if the foundation is not secure, you're not going to be able to build the rest of the structure.
That's right.
And David talks to us on that theme now in this next clip, and he also talks about a very important point regarding the political party that the candidates belong to. Let's listen again to the founder of Wall Builders, David Barton.
Vote and vote biblically, and then get everybody else they know to vote. It's not enough to vote. You have to vote biblically. And you have to make the analysis based on biblical stands, where the scripture comes down on a number of issues. And I would safely say you can rank those issues. I talked to Christians after the last election who voted, and in my opinion, had voted on the wrong side biblically. And I asked them, how can you do this? And they said, well, this candidate has a great stand with the poor and what they're doing to the poor. And I said, all right, I buy that is a biblical issue. I mean, we know James 1:26, pure religion, undefiled before God, to help the poor and orphans. I buy that. But I'll tell you, the poor doesn't make God's top 10. You take the Ten Commandments, preservation of innocent life does make it. Mm-hmm. Preservation of marriage and morality does make it. Mm-hmm. There's some that are more important than others. And protection of life is one. Protection of marriage is another.
You just mentioned the Ten Commandments as the basis for our early formation documents.
The first code of laws ever passed in America, 1610 Virginia, contained every one of the Ten Commandments. It said, Ten Commandments, Bible verse, therefore this civil law. Same was done throughout most of the original colonies as they formed their laws. You get to the time of the Founding Fathers, same thing. We have over 500 Supreme Court decisions at either state or federal Supreme Court level where they quote the Ten Commandments as the absolute final word on the issues. And so for American jurisprudence, that's the way it was. And for a Christian, it needs to be that way in our thinking, that what God has said is the most important needs to be the most important. That doesn't mean other things aren't important, but there is a ranking to them. And come voting time, when that vote comes, we got to get our priorities right according to the way that God sees things and lines them out in the Scriptures. And again, in the Ten Commandments, life and marriage are two of the things that go in his top ten. They're big to him.
Let's talk about party voting for a moment. You know, a lot of people, there's nothing wrong with belonging to a political party. There's nothing wrong with being loyal to a political party. But there's something very wrong when a person's loyalty to a party is greater than their loyalty to God and moral principles.
That's exactly right. There's a great example from history on this. One of my favorite founding fathers, a guy named Benjamin Rush. He signed the Declaration of Independence. He is the father of modern medicine. He's called the father of public schools under the Constitution. When he died in 1813, the other founders, John Adams and Jefferson, said he was one of the top three founders. So this guy, huge name. We don't ever talk about him anymore. But this man, top three founder, signed the Declaration. He later served in three different presidential administrations, Jefferson, Adams, then Jefferson, then Madison. Now, all three of those guys came from three different political parties. So here's a guy who is partisan. He was part of a party. He signs a declaration, he's in a party, and then he searched for guys from three different parties. And somebody went to him one time and said, what's your party affiliation? This was his answer. He says, I've alternately been called an aristocrat and a Democrat. He says, I'm neither. He says, I'm a Christocrat. And that's exactly right. I'm going to vote what Christ would, if Christ had opportunity to vote for which of these candidates, which one would he vote for? And that's who I'm going to vote for. The scripture, Proverbs 29:2, says when the righteous rule, the people rejoice. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say when the Democrats, Republicans, when the Green Party, when the Constitutional Party. It doesn't say when a party rules. It says when the righteous rule.
Yes.
And that's what we as voters have to do, is say which one is righteous by the stands that God has put forth. If Jesus Christ were casting a vote for these two guys, who would he vote for?
Well, Janet, don't you like that phrase, the Christocrat?
I love that phrase because, you know, I never considered myself either a Democrat or a Republican.
Me neither.
And I like that new phrase, Christocrat. Next time someone asks me what I am, I'm going to say that. I'm going to say I'm a Christocrat. But, yeah. You know, it's a very important lesson because, first of all, from the time of, say, my father or grandfather voted till now, the positions within the candidates within a party, there are pro-abortion Democrats, there are pro-life Democrats, there are pro-abortion Republicans, there are pro-life Republicans. So, you know, just going into the voting booth and going with this loyalty down the party line is a total disaster, because you're going to be putting in people that you really don't know their real positions. Just that letter after their name does not guarantee anything, really.
The positions of the individual people really are critical for people to know and understand. And as you say, things change as time goes on. We have a basic principle in our educational material about elections, and that is that our loyalty is focused first and foremost on the Lord Jesus Christ. And we live out that loyalty in all our choices. Election choices are simply one segment of all the choices that we make in life. And if Jesus is Lord, that means he's Lord of our choices from beginning to end. Now, as the election time comes closer and people want to understand these issues better, our website, politicalresponsibility.org, is the main place that they can go, isn't it, for this information?
That's right. And, you know, we have just about everything they would want to do, from, first of all, prayer. We still need people, if they haven't joined already, our prayer campaign, praying for the outcome of this election. We still need them to be educated, getting our book, Voting with a Clear Conscience, and other materials that we have available. And not just educating themselves, but make that information available to their little circle of family, friends, and church family. And then finally, get involved. We have a form there. It's not too late. They can still sign up in these final moments before the election to possibly just help distribute literature, get people to the polls, anything we can to really make this a really good outcome for the gospel of life. You know, like you said, we're going to be Christocrats, but we've got to get everyone out there voting for biblical principles this November.
I want to make a distinction here between policy and principle as well. You know, you can have two candidates, for example, that are disagreeing about the best policy for reducing crime in a particular community that these elected officials would serve. You don't, however, hear them arguing about whether or not there is a right to commit crime. They're agreeing that on the principle that crime should be reduced. Why? Because people should be protected, all right? Our neighborhood should be safe. They're not arguing about that. They understand that, so does everybody else. What they're arguing about is what's the best policy, all right, to implement the principle. And that's how most issues are. People aren't arguing whether or not there is a right to health care. People are arguing about what's the best way to provide health care, or whether candidates aren't disagreeing about whether children should be educated at all.
That's right.
They're agreeing that they should be educated. They have different ideas about how to implement that. But on certain issues, the disagreement is not about the policy. Is about the principle underlying it. And when it comes to the protection of life itself, when it comes to a candidate's position on abortion, the policy is the principle. In other words, what we're saying is you've got to protect innocent human life. Well, that is the principle. That's a principle you can never break. And therefore, that's a policy that you can never depart from. Sure, you can depart from or you can disagree with specific policies about healthcare, education, reducing crime, as long as you hold on to the principle. But you can't say, I want to allow abortion, and at the same time hold on to the principle, because you've broken the principle that every life has to be protected. And that's why this issue is more foundational than any other issue, anywhere, in any race, that any candidate is talking about. Thanks, Janet, and thank you, brothers and sisters, for joining us for this program. Spread this information. We'll help you to do so. Visit politicalresponsibility.org. Visit wallbuilders.com. Get activated. Be involved. We need you, and we need you now. Stay with us. We'll come back with our action segment.
I want to be a fireman when I grow up.
I want to be a teacher.
I want to be president of the United States.
I want to find a cure for cancer.
The choice to have an abortion alters the course of the future. Please remember, where there's life, there's hope. A message from Priests for Life.
Hello, this is Father Frank Pavone. Most debates between candidates for public office are about what kind of policy to enact in order to apply a principle that they all agree on. For example, all will agree that we have to reduce crime and help the poor. But many have different ideas about the best way to do those things. Disagreement about the policy does not mean disagreement about the principle. But when we talk about the protection of the right to life, the policy is the principle. That is why disagreements about abortion are more significant than other policy issues. The failure to protect the unborn is not simply a bad policy. It undermines the principle behind every good policy, namely that government must protect life. This is Father Frank Pavone, director of Priests for Life.
When I found out I was pregnant, I thought I would lose my job.
My boyfriend told me to choose between him and the baby.
I was already struggling to care for one child, so I had an abortion.
I had trouble conceiving again.
I tried to commit suicide.
I started to have nightmares.
You see, abortion didn't solve our problems.
It just created different ones.
That's why we are silent no more.
We found help in healing, and you can too. Call or go online today.
Welcome to our action segment. We're going to talk to you today about a ballot initiative in the state of South Dakota, and whether you live there or not, there are things you can do to make this successful. Janet, as you know, the legislature in South Dakota passed a law that the governor then signed protecting unborn children in South Dakota and banning abortion. This was a very bold and courageous move by the state of South Dakota. And the pro-abortion people who usually take these kinds of laws into court decided this time to use a different approach. And as you know, they got enough signatures to put it on the ballot. So now in November, on Election Day, November 7th, people in South Dakota are going to be able to vote whether or not they want to protect their unborn children. And of course, polls tell us that most people in South Dakota and most people across America want to protect the unborn children. But there's in one particular area here where public opinion goes the other way, and that is in the cases of rape and incest.
That's right.
Most Americans believe that abortion should still remain legal. We know, however, that abortion doesn't help the victim of rape or incest, and it certainly doesn't help the child.
No, and in particular, we have people who we've had on this Gospel of Life show, Cindy Speltz and her daughter Jennifer Moss. Cindy was a victim of sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
She went ahead, and abortion was never a thought in her mind. And matter of fact, she said her daughter, when she was born, didn't make her think of the rapist, didn't give her all these traumas that they claim happens to this woman. She said if she had had an abortion, she could have never forgiven herself. And she thanks God that she just didn't even have that in her mind.
Right.
And she said that having her daughter Jennifer has been such a joy in her life. It was a more of healing thing for her than had she had gone down the wrong road.
People who get raped and then conceive and then have abortions are usually in counseling more for the abortion than for the rape.
Well, and I know that as a firsthand experience by talking with the women like I do with the Silent No More Awareness Campaign.
Yes.
We do have some of our testimonies that girls who were raped or sexually assaulted in one way or another and have told us that they wish they had had that child. It would have been a comfort for them. To this day in their life, the thing that they regret is not the rape, it's the abortion.
What we have to do, therefore, is to assist the people of South Dakota in getting this law, this ballot initiative, passed. We're urging people to vote yes for the initiative that would protect the unborn children of South Dakota. Let's not let this particular fact that there's no exception for rape and incest stand in the way of saying, yes, we want to protect unborn children no matter how they're conceived. We want to protect also the women who have been victims of rape and incest. We want to protect them from what? From the trauma of abortion. That's the point. Abortion is a trauma for them. You know, this law in South Dakota came about in the first place because of studies on how abortion affects women.
That's right.
And so many of the experiences that you've just recounted in women who've been harmed by abortion came forward. And a study was done by a special task force showing the harm that it brings to women, including women who've been raped.
And it was the women who were the voices of the Silent No More Awareness campaign from South Dakota, who testified and went before the state legislature. They are talking about their personal testimonies and talking about their stories that helped convince those men to vote for this ban on abortion.
So we're urging people to understand, people who live in South Dakota, understand that this is an initiative that should be passed. Secondly, people around the country who know or can contact friends, relatives in South Dakota, or who have any kind of influence there, we want to get this initiative passed. So we ask them to be active with emails, letters to the editor, radio, anything that they can do.
That's right.
Thank you, brothers and sisters, for following up on this. We're interested in protecting not only every child, but we have the compassion for the woman who has been raped and been the victim of incest. We know that abortion doesn't help her, and that's why we're saying yes to this initiative that is on the ballot in South Dakota. Don't let the pro-abortion people try to use this South Dakota experience to try to tell the rest of the nation, and this is what they will tell them if it doesn't get passed. Oh, you see, most Americans don't want to ban abortion. But in fact, we do. We all do. We want to see the unborn protected. Don't let them take us off the track because of this one particular exception. Brothers and sisters, thank you for what you do. Stay tuned now, and we will conclude our Gospel of Life program. Some political candidates think abortion has nothing to do with their job, but legal abortion means the government decides which lives are worthy of protection and which aren't. Do we really want to elect people who think they have that kind of power over life and death? Think about it. This is Father Frank Pavone, director of Priests for Life.
Happy birthday.
The decision to have an abortion not only affects that moment in your life.
Kristen Gordon.
It affects many precious moments to come.
I now pronounce you man and wife.
Please remember, where there's life, there's hope. A message from Priests for Life.
Friends, as we conclude our program, may I invite you to do four things. First of all, tell other people about Gospel of Life. Tell them when these programs air so that they can tune in and learn more about the pro-life movement. Secondly, we like to hear from you. On our website, gospeloflife.com, you can even send us your prayer requests, and our entire ministry team will be more than happy to lift up your concerns and intentions before the throne of God. Thirdly, we're eager and ready to come to your community, to preach in your churches, to gather with your pro-life groups, and to help inspire you in the pro-life cause. And finally, we ask you to donate so that we can keep these programs on the air. You can send your tax-deductible contributions to us at Gospel of Life Ministries. Again, go to our website, and thank you.
In Isaiah 1:26, it says the righteousness of the land is based on the judges and the attorneys in that land. So God looks down on America, 65% of this nation believes life begins at conception, so what? We have a policy that says you can kill these kids up to inches of birth. You know, God can't bless that policy, despite the fact 2/3 of us disagree with it.